This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Last month, Attorney General Jeff Sessions announced new policies to deter immigrants from crossing the border illegally.
I have put in place a zero-tolerance policy for illegal entry on our southwest border. If you cross the border unlawfully, then we will prosecute you. It's that simple. If you smuggle illegal aliens across our border, then we will prosecute you. If you are smuggling a child, then we will prosecute you. And that child may be separated from you as required by law.
Since then, family separations at the border have become routine and alarming to many watching these developments. The process is being called a violation of human rights and ineffective. There are many questions about what's happening to the children, where are they being held, in what condition, how will they ever be reunited with their parents, and in what emotional state. We're talking about family separations at the border. You are welcome to join our conversation. We invite you to call in. The number is 210-614-8980. Have you been watching this development, this new policy? What are your thoughts and observations? 210-614-8980. Email us at thesource@tpr.org, and you can tweet at us at @tprsource. We're joined this afternoon by Debbie Nathan. She's a writer for The Intercept. She's from Brownsville. She's been covering the border and immigration for more than three decades. Erica Schumer is with us, a clinical assistant professor for the Immigration and Human Rights Clinic at St. Mary's School of Law. And Jody Goodwin, Harlingen-based immigration lawyer, is here as well. And again, the number to call in is 210-614-8980. Let me start off with getting some reaction to what we heard from Attorney General Sessions, where he says it's that simple and this is what the law requires. So, Erica, can you tell me if this is what the law requires?
The law absolutely does not require this. Like any criminal case, there is always prosecutorial discretion whether or not to bring criminal charges. And we've never seen this practice where asylum seekers are routinely being subjected to prosecutions for illegal entry. Certainly, there have been cases, but not on this scale and not with this intentionality. Here, the administration made this announcement specifically they want it to be a deterrent. They want to stop people coming, and they're frankly trying to terrorize families by threatening to separate them from their children when they're coming here seeking protection.
Jody Goodwin and Harlingen, how is this impacting the mood on the border?
The mood on the border right now is one that's fairly somber. I can tell you that Ms. Schumer is exactly correct that the law absolutely does not require the prosecution, nor does the law absolutely require that children be separated from their families. Although no one condones the detention of children, and I believe that the United Nations has already made a call to the United States to immediately stop the practice of detaining children, certainly detaining children and separating them from their parents goes far above and beyond the scale of what we have ever seen in the past. I'm not one to say that detention of families is a good thing, but certainly taking children away from their parents and detaining those children separately from the parents is something that we've never seen done before and is certainly not required by the law. There is no such law that would require that. Down here, we see things sad. All of the stakeholders, all of the players in the game, everyone from the judges to the public defenders involved to the immigration advocates to the community that supports those individuals that are coming to seek protection in the United States is seeing a very sad day, sad time where our country has come to this point where we would use the backs of children to effectively try to drive home a point.
Debbie Nathan, you're a reporter. You've been covering this a while. You've got some dynamite tape. We're going to play that in just a little bit. We'll work our way up to that audio that you provided for us. But I want to get back to what Attorney General Sessions said when he said it's that simple. They're just going to do a zero tolerance policy at the border. Is it really that simple?
Well, let me just tell you a couple of things. One is that, to my mind, it is just absolutely sadistically hypocritical for him to be saying that people are going to be automatically criminalized when they cross illegally and separated from their children, as though they could go through port of entries, which is the supposedly legal way of doing it. But I've been out reporting in El Paso, and this is happening up and down the border. Instead of people being allowed to walk right up to the port of entry, which is the big building that you go into when you go back into the United States from Mexico at any given point on the border, CBP is now posting agents at the tops of the bridges or the middle of the bridges where the imaginary international line is, often marked with a plaque. And they are preventing people from stepping foot on U.S. soil because they know that people seeking asylum have every right to do that as soon as they cross that line. And so what I found were people at the Mexico side of the bridge who'd been told over and over again, two times a day for days after they've come up from Guatemala, nope, sorry, you can't cross. You can't do this. We're full. We don't have time. So they're down at the bottom of the bridge and with babies, you know, with little kids and children, and they're squatting there by the bathrooms at the bottom of the bridge with nothing to eat. They're begging, they're crying. They're, you know, it was 105 when I interviewed people the other day. And some of them say, well, you know, we're going to have to go down below. We're going to have to go under the bridge and over the river illegally, right? And once they do that, then they're, you know, even if they walk up to a Border Patrol agent, which is what they want to do, they just want to walk up, you know, and be detained and apply for asylum, that's when the kids are taken away from them. To me, it's such a form of sadism. And here's something really odd. When I was in El Paso, I became aware of the fact that they are still, even apprehending people sometimes illegally, or people who've come across illegally, not through the port of entry, and they're still not separating them from their children and still giving them ankle monitors and releasing them. It used to be called catch and release. So that no one seems to know why that's happening, not even the most well-informed immigration rights advocates in El Paso. It just seems like everything is in a state of anarchy, and nobody can figure out, you know, why some people are given ankle monitors and kept with their kids and released and, you know, given a court date years down the line, and other people are having their children taken away from them. It just seems like, again, a kind of a sadistic inconsistency that does nothing but confuse people, you know, and keep people sort of off balance, including the immigrants' rights advocates.
Okay, so we're going to get more into what Debbie Nathan has been seeing doing her reporting. We have some audio from her. We're going to be playing when we come back from the break from inside an immigration court. Also talk about a photograph that she's been able to obtain, which shows the mass prosecution of individuals. Our objective today is to explain what is going on. You know, what is the law? How is it being implemented? How is this impacting people? And what appears to be the process and how effective this is in trying to secure the border. And so when we come back, we're going to take some calls. We'll hear that tape from Debbie Nathan. We invite you to call in. The number is 210-614-8980. Patrick, hang on. We'll get to your call right after this break. The Source continues. Stay tuned. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about family separation at the border. These are families who are coming across the border without authorization, and the children are being declared unaccompanied minors, even though they're here with their parents, and their parents are being put into immigration court separated from their children. How is that working? What is this policy? How is this being rolled out? If you got a question or a comment, the number is 210-614-8980. Let's go to the phone lines, and Patrick is on the line. And Patrick, you're on the air. Go ahead, sir.
Hi, good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call. I'm just upset with the whole immigration thing. There's been a flood of people coming over here. If you leave Guatemala or some Latin American country and take your children with you, and you know you're coming all the way to the United States, which is no short trip, that's a bad choice. If you got children, you better be careful of what you're doing. This life is about making good choices. You got so many people that have come here illegally. And when you get arrested, there is no guarantees. When you get arrested for something, you go to jail. And nobody knows what's going to happen to your belongings, to whatever you have. I mean, I don't have much sympathy for people. If you're breaking the law, you suffer the consequences.
Okay, Patrick, thank you for calling in. I appreciate you bringing your point of view forward. So let me go to Erica Schulmer. She is a professor of immigration and human rights at the clinic there at St. Mary's School of Law. And so what about Patrick's response?
Well, first of all, the number of illegal border crossings is actually down. It's the lowest that has been in quite some time.
So it's not a flood.
No, what has increased is the number of families coming from Central America and Mexico, but that is in response to crises in their countries where they are fleeing very violent situations. And I do agree with the caller that if you're going to bring your children on this journey, you shouldn't take that decision lightly, but having interviewed many hundreds of women who were forced into that situation since 2015, none of them take it lightly, and they all made that decision because they believed that they and or their children were going to be murdered, raped, or otherwise harmed if they didn't do it.
What about the role that the United States has had in the destabilization of countries like Guatemala and Honduras over the years? Is there some level of responsibility there?
Certainly. A lot of the violence stems from the proliferation of gangs and drug cartels, and we do bear responsibility for that. The expansion of the 18th Street gang and the MS-13 certainly comes from Central Americans being deported from this country and going back and growing those gangs there. And also there's collusion with organized criminal groups that are trafficking drugs that are coming to the U.S. and being consumed in the U.S., and so we do bear responsibility for the violence in those countries.
And so, Jody Goodwin, you're Harlingen-based immigration lawyer. When we talk about the illegal acts, they're breaking the law when they cross the border, so these people are criminals just by crossing the border, right?
Well, the act of entering the United States at a place that's not designated as a port of entry is a misdemeanor offense and can be prosecuted in federal court. There's no doubt about that. For decades, the prosecution of those misdemeanor offenses has always been one that was left to the discretion of the U.S. attorneys in any of the given divisions along the southwest border. And because of resources and the ability of the federal courts to prosecute crimes that are much more significant, felonies and such, not all of those crossers have been prosecuted. There's been some historical context, I guess, that we could put this in when there was the Operation Streamline that began originally in the San Diego sector, and then eventually made its way down through the rest of the southwest border into Texas, wherein the Border Patrol would designate certain geographic boundaries where if someone was picked up within those boundaries, there would be 100% prosecution in those boundaries. Operation Streamline was an epic failure in the sense that it did not result in the desired outcome, and that being to deter individuals fleeing from extreme violence, fleeing from persecution. And as Professor Schulmer indicated, the individuals who make the choice to embark on a journey that is filled with danger, filled with peril, knowing what the likely result will be when they arrive in the United States, and that is detention, they make that choice with a heavy heart. It is not something that they take lightly. And if you have to imagine that whatever it is that they're fleeing from, be it murder, be it rape, be it persecution, be it harassment, be it the inability to be able to provide for their children, has to be something that is so distraught, so significant that they're willing to make those types of choices with respect to the risks of the outcome. So I would suggest that the caller is certainly correct in mentioning the fact that it's really important that these decisions aren't made lightly. And I can promise you that after representing thousands of asylum applicants over the last 25 years, that decision is never made lightly to leave your home and embark on a journey that's filled with danger.
I've been to Honduras. I had a local fixer take me into these neighborhoods, and it was basically a lawless area, a murder capital of the world, where the gangs control everything. And you can just see how horrible it would be for many people who are try to avoid that life, and they have few choices. But let me go over to Debbie Nathan. You brought us some audio tape that we're going to play right now, and I hope you could help us set this up. This is audio from an immigration court, and we hear from a judge. Who is this judge, and what is going on?
This judge is named Ronald Morgan. He's a magistrate judge in Brownsville. I just want to make it clear that we're not talking about immigration court. These are criminal courts. And these are people who the U.S. attorney who's prosecuting in the courtroom specifies have no criminal background, and they're being criminalized. Once they plead guilty, which about 99.99% of them do, because they're advised that that's the best thing for them to do, they are now criminals. They're adjudicated criminals, and that gives the feds the rationale for taking the children. So this is a magistrate judge. These happen in several magistrate criminal courts. And this is a judge who has been dealing with these cases by the time that this tape was made for about a week. He's aware that children are being taken away from their parents, the people in his courtroom, the adults in his courtroom. He's become aware over the past several days that children are being separated from the parents. And one reason he's aware of that is because he happens to be a judge who, when people get a chance right before sentencing, when the defendants get to talk to him, many often do. So that's what you're going to hear in the tape.
Okay, we're going to play that tape now. It's kind of long, and so the callers, you need to hang on. We'll get you as soon as we can, but let's play this tape.
Mr. Mendoza-Mas, anything you wish to say before sentencing?
No.
Mr. Andrade Andino, anything you wish to say before sentencing?
No.
Mr. Castillo-Diaz, anything you wish to say before sentencing?
No.
Mr. Chinchilla Macia, anything you wish to say before sentencing? Mr. Hernandez Lopez, anything you wish to say before sentencing?
Si mi niña se va a ir conmigo cuando me deporten a mí.
Is my little girl going to go with me when I get deported?
Your Honor, both she and the man next to her had their children with them. They had a credible fear claim. They're both taken in custody and their children were separated from them, and I've been unable to figure out where the children are at this point.
Okay, what my understanding is, Ms. Hernandez, the way it's supposed to work is that because you're from some country other than Mexico, you're going to be sent to an immigration camp. At that immigration camp, you are supposed to be joined by your child. So that you and the child will be together at a camp until such time that the both of you are sent back. That's what's been explained to me. So, anything else you wish to say then before sentence? Okay. Mr. Hernandez Rodriguez, anything you want to say before sentence?
Sí, también sobre mi hijo, yo lo traigo conmigo. Aquí me lo separaron.
Also, I was bringing my child with me, and I got separated. They got separated. We got separated.
Okay. And like I just told Mr. Hernandez Lopez, my understanding, the way it's supposed to work, is because you're from a country other than Mexico, you're going to be sent to a camp. And you're going to be sent to a camp where your child will be allowed to join you. That's my understanding of how it's supposed to work. You understand that?
Sí.
How old is your child?
6 years.
6 years.
Me preocupa bastante porque, no sé, me duele saber que me lo van a dejar aquí y a mí me van a mandar o...
I'm very worried because they may leave him here and then I'm going to get deported.
Well, you're supposed to be joined with your child before you are deported. Mr. Hernandez Lopez, let me just tell you, the theory is that's going to keep you from coming to this country. I don't know the answer to that. All I can tell you is what my understanding is that you and the child are supposed to be joined before you're deported. Right, that's the case. But anyhow, anything else you wish to say, Mr. Hernandez Rodriguez, before sentence?
No.
Okay. Ms. Diaz-Castro, anything you'd like to say before sentence?
El mismo caso de ellos que mi hija, solo que ella no me la han separado, pero me dijeron que sí me la iban a quitar.
Same case as theirs. They haven't separated me from my daughter, but they told me they were going to take her away.
Well, let's hope they don't. You and your daughter should be joined together. Let me just ask, Ms. Gander, my understanding is that where there is parent and child, the parent and child are supposed to be joined before they are separated and sent home. Is that correct?
That's what I heard, Your Honor, as well.
Tell you what, if it's not, then there, a lot of folks have some answering to do. Because what you've done, in effect, by separating these children, is you're putting them someplace without their parent. You can imagine there's a hell, and that's probably what it looks like. You best confirm that's the case. You best make sure that's the case.
Yes, Your Honor.
Have a seat.
So, Debbie Nathan, this is a federal magistrate. It seems like he's making decisions that are going to impact these people, but he's not sure about what the impact is going to be.
Yes, and, you know, he seems to want to believe that the children and the parents are being reunited, and that is not true. Something he could figure out easily if he just looked at where the parents are being sent, which are adult-only facilities. But he's clearly upset. He says to the prosecutor that, you know, if they're not being reunited, then you've created what I imagine to be a hell. And, you know, he's very, I mean, there are a lot of people in these courthouses, as one of the other guests said, who seem very disturbed by what's going on. And, you know, that's one reason why that photograph that was in my article that shows over 30 people in West Texas lined up in court, and it's illegal to take photographs in court, but apparently a court reporter took a photograph of one of these proceedings. So it got leaked out into the public. People are upset, even in the court situation, about what's going on.
So, but what is happening? So those people who pled guilty will be going to a detention center, and the children are someplace else. When will they have a reunion?
Well, you know, nobody knows. And there have been people who have been deported without their kids, and they don't know where their kids are, and the feds are losing track of a lot of the kids. So, you know, that's something that nobody really knows.
That's
when they're going to be reunited with their children.
Okay, we're going to talk more about that. We've got a lot of callers here. We need to get on the air. The number to call in for you to join a conversation, tell us what you think, what you've seen. If you've had contact with the immigration system or the folks who've gone through it, give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980. When the government acts, it acts in all of our name. It draws its power and its authority through us and our consent as a people. Are they using your power, your consent, in the way that you feel appropriate and fair and respectful of human rights? Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980. The Source continues after this break. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. We're talking about family separation at the border. This is part of the new Trump zero tolerance policy set in place by Attorney General Jeff Sessions. This is removing parents and their children and to divert them different parts of our immigration system. The question is, when will they ever be reunited and in what emotional state? Let's go now to some callers, and Elizabeth is on the line. Elizabeth, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you very much for the opportunity, David. I'm just thinking, as I listen to Jeff Sessions, in contrast to so many people on social media who are outraged at this, who are appalled at this practice, he seems to have no problem with it. And I thought, what is going on in this man's head? And so my suspicion is that perhaps coming out of the Deep South, and we know that some of the objections to his confirmation when he was nominated was that he would be racist, and he is showing some of his historical tendencies in slavery, they had no qualms with selling whole families off and separating children and parents. So I'm wondering how much of a cultural background built into this man's mentality is having an impact on this practice.
All right, Elizabeth, thank you for the call. Let me go over to Larry for a different point of view. Larry, welcome to The Source, sir. You're on the air.
Hello there. Thank you for taking my call. I'd just like to make two or three points real quickly. First off, much disagreement with the professor there about the criminals being deported and starting up the 18th Street gang and MS-13 down in Guatemala, Honduras. Those people are criminals here. There'll be criminals there. We bear no responsibility for them being criminals wherever they're going to be. Just because they're criminalized here, criminalized in prison, go there and flourish their criminality, we don't bear the responsibility for that. Completely disagree with that notion. The idea that someone steps their foot across the border illegally and becomes a criminal, that is definitely in our law. We need to realize that. We need to realize that if we don't enforce our laws, then we don't have laws. If we don't like those laws, then I suggest that we get on our lawmakers and tackle the immigration problem.
Okay, Larry, thank you for those 2 points. I appreciate that. Let me get reaction from Jody Goodwin. She's a Harlingen-based immigration lawyer. And what you're seeing with people, they're definitely being treated as criminals when they cross the border, right?
Well, now they are definitely being treated as criminals with the zero tolerance policy being prosecuted first. I would add that there's always been prosecution. So there's always been this process by which individuals who've crossed the United States illegally and they've always been prosecuted, just not on the scale and without the discretion that they've been able to use in the past. So to the extent that this is something new in terms of prosecuting people for entering the country unlawfully, that's not new. That has always happened. That's always gone on. And there have been conscious decisions made with respect to prioritizing resources to decide who merits being prosecuted and put through the criminal system for unlawfully entering the United States first. So this is nothing new. What is new is just the scale upon which it's happening, the absence of the use of discretion, and the complete and total disregard for humanity with respect to separating children from their parents. So, and I want to make one point, if I could, with
yes.
respect to the separation of the children. There's been much, you know, hype about how this is what the law requires, and that is absolutely not true. The fact that there are detention centers that exist where families can remain together is something that we're overlooking. There's certainly been historical examples of individuals that are prosecuted but are never separated from their children. Detention centers where families can be held often hold individuals that are being held civilly for immigration violations, but also being held criminally by the U.S. Marshals while they're pending prosecution. So to say that this is something that the law requires, that is just absolutely ridiculous, because there are ways and means that the administration could take in order to keep the children together with their parents. And they're just choosing not to do it, quite frankly, because of what Debbie indicates is the sadistic nature of the administration.
Okay, let's go to another caller. This is Jenny, and Jenny is with Raices. Raices is a San Antonio-based nonprofit that provides court help assistance with people dealing with immigration court. Is that right, Jenny?
Yes, hi. Yeah, Raices, we're the largest immigration nonprofit in Texas. So we have offices here in San Antonio, in Corpus, Austin, Dallas, Fort Worth, and Houston. So we're all over the place. But thank you so much to the panelists for all your great work. I really wanted to share that if people in San Antonio want to get involved and do something in our community, they can volunteer with us. We do we go to the bus station every day and provide Know Your Rights presentations for the families that are getting released from the family detention centers. They also can support the LEAF Project, which is our new project that we launched to provide representation for unaccompanied minors after they get released from detention. And they can also support our bond fund, which will help the parents get released from detention to be reunified with their kids.
And so, Jenny, what are you seeing? So you are y'all going making site visits where the children are being held after they've been separated?
Well, we do have an unaccompanied, we do represent kids through our unaccompanied children's program. But what we're mainly focusing on with our new projects is looking at how we can support those families that are getting separated, specifically providing representation to the parents who are held in the Pearsall and the Prairie Land Detention Facility.
So there are children, as I understand, that are maybe as young as 16 months old who are being held as an unaccompanied minor who was separated from their parent crossing the border, and that child is expected to somehow explain why they are deserving of asylum?
Well, I don't know that I can actually speak directly to that, but I do know that kids do not automatically have access to representation. If you need a lawyer for immigration court, you either have to pay for one yourself or you have to find a pro bono source of that representation. So that's what we focus on, is making sure that everybody has equal access to justice and everybody has the opportunity to work with an attorney in their case.
All right, Jenny, thank you for the call. I appreciate you showing us, telling us what's going on that end. Let's go now to Chip. Chip, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call. All I can say is, as a taxpayer and therefore extorted American, the only thing I can ask is, what are the logistical costs of all this? How expensive is it to separate the families? What is the cost of supporting children in a separate environment from their support network? How many lawyers will Zero Tolerance require on the prosecution side, and how much resource will there be on the defense side, and how many judges will we need, and what kind of time lag?
All right, Chip, thank you for the call. So, Erica Schomer, with the professor at Immigration and Human Rights Clinic, St. Mary's School of Law.
Thanks for the question. The costs are enormous and something that I think many taxpayers should be concerned about. So first of all, with the criminal prosecutions, that is a cost. They're having a federal public defender that they're entitled to by law. There's a daily rate that they're paying the U.S. Marshals to keep them in custody. Apart from that, you then have the cost of detaining the children in ORR facilities. And because they are children, in addition to the actual space, the children have to have access to education, medical services, food. Every single day that a child is in ORR custody, the government is paying, you know, per child per day. And then when their parent is sent to an adult detention facility, again, we are paying per person per day for their detention. And the price varies based on the facility, but it's anywhere on the low end from about $95 a day for an adult up to, I believe, $190 a day, depending on the facility. And these are lengthy detentions. So, for example, at the Carnes Residential Facility, where families are detained as a family unit, most of them are in and out of there within about 20 days, and so their detention is relatively short. On the other hand, in the ORR facilities and in the adult detention centers, people can be detained for much longer periods of time. So, for example, we represent quite a few asylum seekers detained in Pearsall, and it's pretty routine for our clients to be detained close to a year by the time they actually have their asylum case adjudicated and are granted asylum. So at that point, you as a taxpayer have paid thousands of dollars for that asylum seeker to be detained. The government has at its disposal much more cost-effective mechanisms like GPS monitoring, simply checking in with periodic appointments with ICE that cost a fraction of what detention costs.
Well, what about looking upstream? Why people are leaving their homes and their families and their native countries to come to Texas? Wasn't there some sort of thought about if we took, it would be more cost effective to stabilize Honduras, other countries in Central America provide some resources so that there would be a criminal justice system, so that there would be a way to fight the gangs in that location, to provide public safety so that people wouldn't have to flee those areas. You know, we're spending billions of dollars to house and prosecute and then detain these people. You have to think about, where would those dollars be better spent? You know, maybe we can think, look upstream at the source of the whole issue. We're going to come back. We'll take some more callers. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. The Source continues right after this break. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. Debbie Nathan, a writer for The Intercept, she's from Brownsville, has covered the border and immigration for more than three decades. Debbie, let me ask you about, where are these children being held and in what conditions?
Some of them are put into foster care in a foster care system that's the federal foster care system, and others are in ORR, which is the Office of Refugee Resettlement. They're in facilities that are run, again, by that is another federal agency.
We saw clips, some video of Senator Merkley visiting a facility down in the Rio Grande Valley, a converted Walmart. What do we know about that type of conditions? We've seen photographs of children held in cages. They look like dog kennels. They've got nothing in there except concrete floor and a space, shiny sheet, a space blanket to give them comfort.
I would love to get into those facilities in Brownsville myself. And as a reporter, I'm not allowed. But I have heard, and I know people who work in these facilities, that they are really, I mean, the issue is not any kind of physical privation of the kind that you're talking about. I believe that those images that you've seen have been in Border Patrol holding facilities where children are kept for about a three-day period, maximum. But I think the problem with the facility that the senator tried to visit is not that kids are being tortured or that they're being, like I said, deprived of material things. But what I have heard, and, they're given education, they're taken to doctor's appointments. These are kind of the anecdotal things that I hear from living in the community. But I've also heard, for example, that they can't be touched. I mean, when people come in to see them, I'm not sure about the workers, I don't want to go that far, but physical contact when, people come in to visit and look at conditions and do whatever they do in terms of providing social services, they're not allowed to touch even small children. And, of course, the children are traumatized. I mean, they've been separated from their parents. So that even in the best of conditions, to hold a bunch, it's pretty much like an orphanage. I guess it's like a kindly run orphanage, except that the parents are not dead and the children have been yanked from their parents. And so just to have them in these detention centers, even under the best of physical circumstances, is outrageous. Because it's very traumatic, as anybody can imagine.
All right, another caller, 210-614-8980, if you want to call in. Albert is on the line. Albert, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you. Good to talk with you. This is my first time calling ever any place. I'm really upset over this conversation. Years ago, I used to believe that we should have a strict border wall or some kind of barrier from people crossing. But recently, in the last couple of years, a friend of mine said, let's bring some food to this home here in San Antonio where boys, maybe around the age of 15 to 16, are being held until I don't know what happens after that. Anyway, I speak Spanish. I'm a former counselor and teacher, retired now. And so I accompanied my friend. And since I speak Spanish, I spoke to one of the persons and one of the young men and said, well, how did you get here? And did you come by yourself? Yes. Do you have family here? No. Do you have cousins here? No. Do you have brothers here? No. Do you have other kinds of people here? No. So you came by yourself? Yes. Okay, fine. I'm still thinking about that. And I talked to the second boy, about the same age, and I went through the same thing. And again, he came by himself. He has no relatives here, no friends, nothing. But I said, well, why did you come? And he said, well, this gang of guys came over to me one day and said, your job is to behead this other guy in the village and bring us his head. If you don't bring us his head, then we will kill you. And I said to myself, oh, that's a good reason. And it's like, this is the reality. These kids are not gangs crossing. They are trying to escape the gangs that are in these Central American countries.
So. All right, Albert, thank you for the call. And your story echoes some of the things that I have heard. And Jody Goodwin, you're an immigration attorney down in Harlingen.
Well, I think that the story that the caller recounts is one that we've heard numerous times over and over again. And, of course, there's variations on those stories. I just wanted to sort of bring an anecdote. I've interviewed a number of young girls that are designated as unaccompanied minors, and most of them come from El Salvador, Honduras, less so from Guatemala, and even less so from Nicaragua. But the recurrent theme for many of those girls is that after about the age of 12, the girls stop getting an education. The girls stop going outside of their homes because they're targeted by individuals who are criminals, individuals who are members of illegal criminal organizations in their home countries. And if they are to go out, they're targeted to become the property of those gangs. So you have an entire class of young kids whose lives basically stop somewhere around the age of 12 or 13, because if they don't succumb to whatever the demands are of the gangs, they will themselves end up killed or raped or be forced to do things that they don't want to do or to be involved with. And that's the reality of the reason why a number of these children come. And if I could, I want to circle back to sort of a rhetorical question that was posed right before we had our last break. And that is, you know, where's a better way to be able to spend our resources as a nation, as taxpayers? Should we have these entirely complex immigration systems where we use billions and billions of dollars to detain individuals while they go through an immigration system? Or is there a better way? Is there a way of looking at the source? Is there a way of dealing with the source? And I have to admit that this has been sort of, you know, pet ideology of mine for years, and that is looking at the push and pull factors that bring people to the United States. There's certainly something that's pushing them out of their home countries, because no one leaves their home unless they are pushed out for some reason. And if the pull factor to the United States is largely because of the stability of the economy, as well as the stability of the idea of freedom and the idea of democracy that our country stands for. And I think that's certainly a good reason that individuals from all over the world, I know we're focusing on Central America, but there are individuals that come to our borders seeking asylum from all over the world. And the reality is that investing in education, investing in economic development, investing in shoring up judicial systems, investing in anti-corruption worldwide is what will eventually take away those push factors. And until we as a country are willing to make those types of investments that will better all of us in the end, not just those here in the United States that end up paying for as taxpayers for our system, but also for the betterment of the individuals that are fleeing violence and persecution in their home countries. I think that's how we tackle the source.
Okay, Jody, let me go to another caller, and this is John. And John, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you so much, Mr. Martin Davies. I'm the pastor of the San Antonio Mennonite Church here downtown, and I just want to reiterate and echo the Christian voice of mourning and also outrage that we feel in our hearts, but also that's based in God's word. And we're preaching this every Sunday morning, and every Christmas we tell the story that we find in Matthew of this King Herod, and he's, you know, this guy who has some promiscuity issues, and he's humiliated and he's angered by this threat that he feels to his kingdom, and his response is to rip apart families. And then we read the story of Jesus himself being taken in the night by his parents to a foreign country to save his life. And then later on, of course, we hear this Jesus preaching that what God has joined, let no man put asunder. And that is precisely what we're doing.
Let's go on to Debbie Nathan. Where is this going? What kind of reporting needs to happen? There's so many questions out there.
You know, I've been thinking for the last several minutes about, Patrick was the first caller who, you know, talked about how people need to obey the law, and I believe there was someone else with similar sentiments. And, I mean, I don't think it's really reporting. I mean, I've never said this before, but I would like to invite these gentlemen who took the trouble to call and, you know, put these thoughts out here. To, you know, I would like to say, to invite you to come report with me, to come to a detention center and talk to a Central American. You can get my email or my phone number from the station. Give a call. I get a lot of extremely uncivil criticism, mostly anonymous, from people when I do my reporting after it's published. But I always appreciate people who, you know, talk about floods of immigrants or they should realize that they shouldn't break the law. I appreciate when those sentiments are expressed civilly, and I believe that it's almost like not even an issue of listening to reporters so much as it is for people to try to find the way, you know, to actually sit down with people coming up from these countries. And that's quite possible to do, as our caller just talked about, who, you know, went in and started working at a place where he could talk to unaccompanied minors. He was full of stories that changed his mind. So I think that we have to, you know, we have to come up with a way of getting beyond all the very inflamed rhetoric, the use of the word flood to describe people who are coming up. You know, people are not dirty water from a hurricane. The way to do that is to figure out ways to actually sit down and talk to these people and hear their stories. And
provide alternative narratives that are based on facts and human stories. What's happening to these people? Who are they? Where do they come from? What are they looking for? And how can we all work together to bring that about? I want to thank you, Debbie Nathan. She is a writer who's been on top of this. Erica Schulmer, she's with the Immigration and Human Rights Clinic at St. Mary's School of Law. Debbie Goodwin, Harlingen-based immigration lawyer. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio.